everybody, and welcome to Boston Balling. I'm your host, Gabby Hurlbutt. It's the middle of the week, so you're almost at the end of the week. Power through. Congratulations to you. Spring has finally started to seem to maybe come. There's been quite a bit of rain up here in this area, so it hasn't really felt like spring, but it's been nice the last couple days, so I'm hoping that that tide is finally turning and we are finally in the midst of spring. It's a great time of year for sports, really. I mean, baseball season is here, hockey and basketball are approaching the playoffs, so it's just a very exciting time to be a sports fan right now, especially if you are a Boston sports fan, as the Celtics and Bruins have both punched their tickets to the postseason. So that's very exciting. And I have a perfect person on with me today to talk about a lot of what's going on with the Bruins and the hockey scene in Boston in general. He does the PA announcing for the Boston Bruins. So if you've been to Bruins games, you've definitely heard his voice and are familiar with him. He also does it for PWHL Boston as well in their brand new debut season as well. So Jake Zimmer, how are you doing today?
Thanks for having me on, Gabby. This is, you hit the nail on the head, a really exciting time. I saw a Twitter poll the other day that was asking people, what is a better sports month, October, April? And I honestly am kind of with April right now. There's a lot going on. There's, the March Madness just wrapped up, Frozen Four this weekend, and then you're down the home stretch in both the NBA and the NHL. So this is a really exciting time for sports.
It really is, yeah, and I'm coming off a huge high as well because I am a diehard UConn basketball fan, grew up right by the UConn campus, so I always grew up going to games because my dad and my grandfather had season tickets to UConn football and basketball games, so as you can imagine, it's a very exciting time for me right now.
We share that in common off the bat. I come from a UConn family. I didn't go there, but my dad and nearly all of his siblings went there. I had a sister that graduated a couple of years ago. So there was really no other option than to root for UConn. And more importantly, there were three teams that I had to root against growing up, and I still do. It's Villanova, Syracuse, and Georgetown. So those were absolutely non-negotiables as a UConn fan growing up. So cool. They've done, though. I mean, you've got to think top three program ever. So right off the jump, I mean, this is UConn's world. We're all just living in it.
It really is. And I mean, Dan Hurley has just been a fantastic coach for this team. And just the way that he gets this team motivated for games is really special. And it was just every single game, like when you thought it was going to be close, UConn would just pull away. Like that Alabama game was making me a little bit nervous. And then UConn still won the game by double digits. And it's like, you look back at the final score of that game and that doesn't tell the story of what actually happened because Alabama actually played us tough. And I was like, this is the first time in this tournament that I felt like legitimately a little uncomfortable.
You know, every time I looked at a UConn game and, you know, not to dive too deep into the gambling world, but a lot of friends went to UConn. They're talking about the spreads all the time. And I'm like, that just seems too much. And then every time they played, they had the throttle on. I think it was, I don't have the data in front of me, but maybe a 14 or 15 point scoring margin average in this tournament. I mean, that's insane. So they just had the foot on the gas pedal the entire time. They were the most dominant team, I think, the sport has had in a long time. So it was really cool to see what they put together.
It really was. And I'm very much looking forward to attending the parade on Saturday too. It'll be very exciting. And you know, that back-to-back championship gear I've definitely stocked up on already. So I'm excited about that as well. But there's definitely a lot of other things going on in sports right now too. And you obviously work in the realm of hockey and lacrosse, which is super cool. And, you know, I definitely want to talk a little bit about the Bruins, where they're at right now. But I first want to kind of just hear from you about how you got into the PA announcing. How did that come about for you?
Yeah, I grew up in Fairfield County, Connecticut, so it sounds like we share that in common. Or the 203 was, as I call it, you're probably an 860 person, it's all good. We'll be fine. Grew up in that part of Connecticut, and high school sports were just rampant, right? This was the best high school sports county, I think, in New England, honestly. I was a baseball player. I quickly realized, I did not have a future playing any sport, college or professionally or anything like that. Combined with the fact that I just grew up sort of looking up to these famous announcers. I grew up a big Yankee fan. So, would walk into Yankee Stadium and hear Bob Shepard, the voice of God, as they called him, and Michael Kay and John Sterling. I know I'm in the Boston market. That's my one flaw. Okay, people, I grew up a big Yankee fan, but Connecticut, yeah. You have the luxury of sort of choosing your fandoms, right? Whenever everybody gives me crap about being a Patriot and Yankee fan, I grew up watching Derek Jeter and Tom Brady, the two best at what they did. So, I'll put my I'll put my Yankee flag away back here wherever it is.
My dad's a Yankee fan as well, so.
Yeah, I'm accepting being in this Boston market. That's my one flaw, people. All right, to get over it. But grew up idolizing a lot of those announcers like John Sterling, Michael Kay, and, had said, wow, wouldn't it be cool if you could get paid to talk about sports and make that be your career, right? So that's always something I aspired to. In high school, I remember convincing the athletic director to, we had a big game against a rival high school. Remember just convincing him, saying, hey, give me a small little space in the gym. I'm going to set up a little microphone and I'm just going to call the game, right? I'm not going to cause any harm to the school. I'm not going to, say that it's an official stream or whatever. And he let me do it and started calling some basketball games, screwing around with my friends. That turned into going to Bryant in Rhode Island, Division I program across the board, getting involved as a student worker and student radio, doing camera, all this stuff. Ended up being the public address announcer for men's basketball there when they had a coaching change, ended up freelancing quite a bit around the New England area for the past, 5, 6, 7 years. So getting involved Providence College and BU and Bryant at Harvard, Bentley, a lot of those schools around here. So one thing led to another and, all of a sudden sitting in the public address announcing chair, fulfilling it a couple times at TD Garden. So that's, it's been a wild couple of years, to say the least. It's been a super fun few years as the PA announcer for the Bruins. And, I consider myself to have the coolest job in the world.
Yeah, it's probably so cool, especially because of the environment at TD Garden during games. There's really nothing else like it. Going to a game there is just so much fun, and the crowd is so into it, and it's always super full. It must be so cool to be a part of that. And especially for you with when you started doing this for the Bruins. I mean, they had such a legendary season last year. So what was that like to be able to experience a season in which they were setting all kinds of records and making history?
I mean, it was nothing short of incredible. This was my first full season as the Bruins PA announcer last year. And
awesome doing this stuff.
I have a vivid memory, and I'll actually tell you exactly what day it is. I think it was December 15th. That was their first loss at TD Garden last year. So yeah. I remember, the post game is usually, they play dirty water. They do the goalie hug. They do the three stars, all this stuff, a lot of high energy. And I remember the control room who cues me, the folks in the game presentation staff, after that loss against Vegas in overtime, they had said, all right, let's go for the closing, the closing stuff. And I sort of paused. I go, it's just hitting me that I've never done a Bruins loss before. And they started cracking up. They're like, what are you doing? Come on, like, say, do the close for the loss. I'm like, I have no idea how this works, people. So that's just a fun memory I've got from that season. But yeah, I mean, laden with accolades, right? I remember sitting up there on 9, and every time they would get out to, the other team would get out to a lead, there was almost never a doubt that the Bruins would come back and win or tie it up or something like that. So, maybe in hindsight, I think everybody wants last year back, and they would have traded in, the President's Cup and the best regular season of all time to go a bit farther in the playoffs, of course. But, I can't help but think how grateful I was for that experience, because there's a realistic chance that I will never have that experience again.
I was gonna say, yeah, that was just such a unique season, and I feel like it set the bar so high for how they were going to do in the playoffs because of the regular season that they did have. And when you have that kind of pressure on you after having that season, it's got to be tough emotionally on the players because there's just so much pressure on them to win. And then the way that the season ended for them was just such a letdown after all of that. And it felt like it was supposed to be the year, especially knowing that there were going to be guys who wouldn't be back after that. And that was their last go of it. And so to me, all of that put together on top of what they did during the regular season and, just combined everything, changes to the coaching staff, and just feeling like they were having a season where they were supposed to win it all. And then for them to, be the way that they were in the playoffs and come so close in that series and have so many opportunities to close out that series and not be able to, definitely left like this feeling of, oh my gosh, like this was supposed to be it with this
Yeah, and
group.
speaking from sort of like the fan experience too. I mean, it's gutting, right? It's I'll never forget sort of the feeling you had when Florida tied it up with 59 seconds left to go in game seven. You see, there's
Unforgettable.
instantly sort of this I'm getting texts from friends at this point, with 4 minutes left to go and the Bruins up with a one goal lead, they look like they're gonna close it out. It's like, hey, good win, right? But that's not how the NHL works. The Florida Panthers had an incredible team last year. They were extremely underrated and sort of just written off last year. I remember having conversations with Jack Edwards. I pop into the Nesson booth every now and then just to say hello, to go over pronunciations and whatnot. And probably midway through the year last year, Jack had told me, he said, "What's going on in Florida? They're so much better than the record shows," right? And he's been on the record about that. He was super high on Florida all year. And it just goes to show that it's anybody's game all the time, and you've really got to bring it in playoffs. And everybody wants last year back. It's everybody in the organization does, of course. The entire fan base obviously wants it back. So we'll see what happens in the coming weeks here.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things where it's like you look back on that series and it's like, yeah, they just ran into a super hot Florida team that connected in all facets of the game at the right time. And that is what it is in the postseason. It's such a different animal than during the regular season. And nothing you do during the regular season matters anymore at that point. It's a brand new game and anybody could come out and just be hot at the right time. And that Florida team clicked, and then they, found opportunities to stay in these games. And there were multiple like instances in which we thought the Bruins were going to close out that series, and it didn't happen. And then as soon as Florida tied that in that game seven, I had this bad feeling that going to overtime they were going to lose. Like I just didn't
I
like
think everybody did, right?
that
It's
feeling
everybody sort of had that sinking.
happening before.
Yeah, everybody had that sinking feeling.
Yeah.
And it's tough to say. Like I wouldn't say I get nervous for these games, right? You have like a little bit of sort of pregame jitters, like you do in any sort of thing that you do. But I remember being on the edge of my seat watching them pull the goalie. Bobrovsky comes off, and they start to get in their six skater set, and everybody's kind of on edge, right? The TD Garden is raucous at this point, but everybody had that sort of, maybe it's it's so difficult to explain that feeling. You're comfortable with your lead, but everybody's uncomfortable, right? Everybody in the building, it was sort of this like weird emotional, this emotional clapping, right? And then they go to overtime, and it's sort of like the energy gets sucked right out of the building almost, and it's all well. The fans are all standing up and cheering and loud, but everybody's sort of got this lingering thing in the back of your head, like, this is not a team you want to let in overtime.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, it was definitely a feeling I think nobody will forget. And then coming into this year, it definitely felt like they were coming in with this huge sense of unfinished business from last year, feeling like they wanted to win it all last year. People were expecting them to win it all last year, and it didn't happen. And now they're coming into this year saying, it's been so long since we've given this city a Stanley Cup championship, and we want that so badly now this year. And this year is definitely a different feel as last year's team. And there's a lot of games this year where their biggest problem has been maintaining and holding leads. And it was definitely a huge concern, you know, for a good portion of this season, is this team can't hang on to any lead, no matter how big it is. And that's something that I'm still looking for moving forward as they, you know, head into the playoff portion of the season, is when they have a lead, they need to be able to maintain it and not give up that lead in the third period.
Yeah, I think the recent successes there, because that's been, you know, a main criticism of this team for pretty much all year by the hockey experts, right? It's been, how do they, you know, how can they come back from leads, right? There was that stretch between like January and February where it felt like impending doom for a lot of the sports writers, right? It was, this team can't, whatever, right? But, you know, I think looking back at the last few weeks, it's a team that I and again, I qualify this as, you know, someone that works for the team, right? It's someone that I was not a hockey expert by any means, right? This is just my own personal opinion here. You know, I like the way they've been playing the past couple of weeks, right? Like they've had some games where they've come from behind. They've fought really hard to get an extra point. Like I look at Washington, you know, on the road, which is always a tough place to play, no matter how the Capitals are. And this is a team that's on the brink of the playoffs as well. You know, they come and get a hard fought 3-2 win in the shootout. They shut out Nashville. That's always a good team. You know, obviously the tides were turned against Carolina, you know, at home, but the week prior was a really solid win over a really good team. So, you know, I think those concerns are starting to alleviate amongst the hockey community now. It's like, you know, we've seen the Bruins can play really well and come back and grab leads, and now they can hold them and extend them out. I like what they did against Pittsburgh a couple of weeks ago, where they just put the gas pedal on and were unrelenting. And that's, Pittsburgh's a playoff team too, potentially. Like the season ends right now, they're in. So, yeah. You know, I think this is, they're minus, you know, a tough one against Carolina, which is, you know, you split the last week against them, whatever. It's a team that's playing good hockey, and it's a team that's sort of, they're figuring out their flaws, and they're addressing them.
Exactly, which is good. This is the exact right time that they need to be starting to have everything click as they head into playoff time. And something that was another big theme with this team that people were keeping an eye on heading into the trade deadline was, are they going to stick with the two goaltender approach? And are they going to continue to utilize both Omark and Swayman? And I know there were a lot of people having mixed thoughts on that. And some people were saying, we need to stick with one and have him be our guy. And other people were like, no, it's been working with two, so why would we not continue with that? So what are your thoughts on that? Did you think that they would end up moving Omark at the trade deadline, or did you think that was all more just like talk and that they knew they wanted to stick with that two goaltender strategy all season?
I honestly have no idea, right? I think, I really think that I can tell you that their chemistry from afar is unbelievable, right? I don't think there's a better goalie tandem that has you know, better chemistry than Jeremy Swayman and Linus Ullmark do.
Yeah, we love the goalie hugs.
yeah, for sure. I'm going to speak about it like a fan would, right? And not as, you know, sort of a member of the Bruins org, but like as a fan, you know, you have to think that this, it's been your strength all year that you can sort of, you know, rotate goalies and, you know, have an elite effort from whichever one of them goes, because you have a Vezina winner last year and you have a guy that's an all-star, Jeremy Swayman, this season. But, you know, now it's up to Jim Montgomery on, and Bob Asenza and all the coaching staff on how they manage this, right? Jim Montgomery said the other day to the press that it's very possible we have someone go 1-2. And then the next person goes 3-4. It's a huge decision to make if you get to game 5, right? Like, what do you do? Do you go 1-1-1, right? Do you have someone playing home games? So I don't know. I really have no idea what is best suited for them, but it's sort of setting themselves up to have to make a really, really hard decision, which Jim Montgomery is no stranger to. I mean, it's think about how hard the decision was in Game 7 last year to say, okay, we've had a guy go six games. Let's throw in a Jeremy Swayman that hasn't played in 3 weeks.
Yeah, that was tough.
So it's interesting. I can't take in their mind, but what I can tell you, it's going to be a really hard decision for them, for sure.
Yeah, and I feel like Montgomery definitely learned from last year, and he got criticized a lot by people in terms of how he managed the goaltending situation last year in the postseason. So I'm curious to see how he does things differently this year and if he maybe has a more equal split of utilizing them, because I felt like last year in the playoffs, they should have kept it the way that they were doing it because that was working. And when he tried to change things up, I feel like it kind of threw things off a little bit. So I'd be intrigued to see if when the postseason does hit, if they're continuing to utilize them in the same way that they are now, because he feels like that's working, or if he's going to try to stick more with one of them over the other. But I know people weren't happy last year with the way that he managed it in the playoffs, because people were like, why would he, you know, stray from what was working, because these guys both were used to playing kind of an equal balance of time.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be the fan take of this, right? Like, you turn on 98.5 or WEI and you've got people calling in and saying, like, what, you know, they've got to do what they've been doing all year. And I think that's what a lot of the sort of the beat writers are saying as well. Like, that was their main criticism of Jim Montgomery last year, was, you know, they had this thing, it was working, right? So I'm not going to pretend to be a hockey coach here, right? But I think Montgomery has certainly addressed it, you know, with the media, and he's sort of said that, you know, hey, I learned my lesson, right? Like, we're gonna come up with a better approach here. What it is, they're not gonna tip their hand, right? They're not gonna let their opponent know what they're gonna do. So, yeah, we're gonna have to find out. You know, and obviously that's going to have to be sooner than later with the playoffs impending. But, you know, I think it's certain that Montgomery seems to be more of the mindset of, hey, we've learned, right? We're going to do what's best for our team, and we'll figure it out when the time comes.
Yeah, I think Montgomery's been a great coach for this team so far. I think he definitely can connect with these players, and he has a great way of going about things. And obviously we saw that last year because the numbers literally showed it. But I think, you know, people were heavily criticizing the Bruins when they let Cassidy go. But sometimes, like, a change can be a good thing. And I don't necessarily think it means like it's a knock on him, because obviously he went and won a Stanley Cup when he went to a new team. But from the standpoint of both him and the Bruins, it's kind of showing that, you know, maybe the change at that time was necessary. And the Bruins brought in somebody who I truly feel like is a good fit to coach this team.
Yeah, for sure. And you look at how interesting the dynamics were last year. I mean, you had one of the best leaders in hockey in that locker room, right, with Patrice Bergeron. So there's that added element of, you know, you can't necessarily overcoach those guys when you have a Hall of Fame, you know, however many times Selke Trophy winner in your locker room, right? I mean, the guy is Patrice Bergeron's the definition of a champion. So I feel like this year's been a little bit different. I don't want to say necessarily that Montgomery's like an authoritative, like, you know, a lay down law, but I mean, he can when he needs to, right? I mean, we saw that he ran guys in practice last week, right? Because he didn't like the effort. He was open with the media. He said, hey, I did what I had to do. And Jeremy Swayman commented to the media last week. He said, yeah, sometimes you just need a reminder of what you're in it for, and to wake up a little bit. So I think that's the kind of guy that, you know, they've responded well to that coaching. They've, you know, you sort of need someone in that locker room to tell you, hey, pick this thing up a little bit, right?
Yeah, exactly. Maintain that focus, because obviously it is a long season and these guys need to stay focused on the goal, and the playoffs themselves are long and stamina really gets tested when you get into the postseason portion of the season. So it's good to have somebody who's like, all right, like, stay focused, like, on what we're trying to accomplish here. And it'll be interesting to see how they match up against some of these other teams in the postseason. You know, obviously they've been playing pretty good hockey generally all season long. So then the trade deadline hit. What did you think overall of the trade deadline that they had? They did add a couple players. Did you think that they should have done more, or they didn't address anything that they should have? Or do you think that they kind of just made moves that you feel kind of like were the icing on the cake of, okay, this makes this team feel complete now?
Yeah, I can't really say one way or another. Like, you know, I'm going to very much take the position of I'm not here to criticize anything that anyone in the NHL does, really, right? But I think, you know, what I can comment on for sure is the fit of the two guys they brought in, right? I think Andrew Peak is an intriguing case, right? Like, the consensus was, it was kind of struggling to find his way in Columbus, right? He was getting healthy scratched and stuff. And I think that's just the review over the past couple of weeks from the media has been, he's been a pretty good fit, right? He's a good net front defender that can, that can make hard hits, and it has really good hockey IQ, and has, a strong aptitude for just the game, right? And I think, as Derek Forbert, is out for the rest of the year, that's logically, okay, here's the guy we have replace him, right? Another big-bodied guy that is pretty sound with the game and can make plays when we need him to, right? They don't need him to be a hero. They need him to be the third-line defenseman. And you see him getting trotted out there with Parker Wallerspoon, who's had another good year. I think Peak's done a pretty good job, right? I think they really like him around there. And then Pat Maroon, that's a guy that he's won three Stanley Cups, right? Who's ever going to, deny a guy that has three Stanley Cups? It'll be interesting to see how he comes out. It sounds like, we'll see him before the end of playoffs, before the start of playoffs and before the end of the regular season. So I obviously he's been practicing. He's been, getting acclimated with the team and whatnot. And I think that's a no-brainer for the Bruins to bring in. Like, anytime you can bring in a guy with the winning that he's had, and obviously he fits the sort of archetype of a big bruiser forward that can lay a hit on somebody, but that can also, be facilitating the offense and scoring every now and then too, maybe helping them out on the forecheck. I think that's a guy you have to bring in. So, Maroon's been up on nine a bunch. He's a really big guy, so that's a guy you don't want to mess with.
No, absolutely not. And there were definitely Bruins fans surprised to see that they brought him in. But the experience is definitely huge. When you have somebody who's been through this before and knows what it's like to win in that type of environment, I think it's going to be huge for some of the guys on this team who don't really have that exposure yet, because that can make a big difference in the postseason too, is sometimes the teams that have the experience, that experience shines through, and that's something that could be really beneficial for them locker room wise too, when they're heading into the postseason, is somebody who's been there multiple times and knows what it takes to actually win in that type of scenario.
Right. Yeah. And that's a guy that, I think, what did he win with Tampa, St. Louis, and what was the other, he might've won two with Tampa, but, I think that's exactly it. Like, that's the sort of the headline you see everywhere when they made that trade. It's like, you bring in a guy that's won. He knows what it takes to be successful in those environments. So in that perspective, I think the Bruins filled their needs, right? They needed a big body defenseman to replace Derek Forbert, who's out for the rest of the year, probably. They needed sort of a guy that, I think they found a happy accident in Justin Brazeau, right? But, with his future uncertain, who knows when we get him back. I haven't seen the latest from the team, but, that's a guy that I think, Maroon can slide right in for at this point when he's ready to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, when you look at those moves that they made and you look at this team overall, they are set up to be in shape to make a deep postseason run. But again, like you mentioned before, it is such a different animal in the postseason. And sometimes it is the teams that people don't expect to kind of come out of nowhere and be those teams that catch fire. And, that Florida team last year, like you said, was underrated. Going into the playoffs, I don't think people were really picking them to go to the Stanley Cup final. So it's really just a matter of, are the Bruins going to be that team? And they definitely have the talent and the capability to get there. I just think, there's a lot of good teams out there, and hopefully they can continue to play the type of hockey they're playing right now, because at this point in the season, they do look good and they've cleaned up a lot of their issues from early on.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, there's, you never know who the wild card candidates will really be. I mean, there's a lot of teams playing really good hockey right now. So, yeah, I think it just goes to show the NHL playoffs is always, it's hectic, right? The best team on paper does not always, advance. And that's the reality of this. And it's the reality of sport. It's like you could have a great regular season and all that matters is the next game in front of you at that point. You got to win the game in front of you and see where it takes you. So, yeah, excited for playoffs for sure.
That's what makes it so fun, too. That's what we love about sports. It's unpredictable. You don't know who's going to win. But at least you have a few tries to get it right. Like, it's not like college basketball where it's like a one and done. Like, at least they have, like, you know, it's a series. So if they don't play well in game one, they can come back and try to make up for that later on. But it's going to be such a fun time right around the corner now with the playoffs starting. So it's definitely super exciting there. And another exciting thing too is that there is a new hockey team in Boston this year for the Professional Women's Hockey League, which is super exciting. I know this is something that had been in the works for a while, and they did make their debut this year. And it's so exciting to kind of see them all come together, people coming from all over to be part of this league. And what I wanted to know from you is, what's that been like for you, being able to be part of something that's like so special and so cool and just brand new right now?
Yeah, I mean, firstly, it's truly an honor to get that call, right? Like, it's funny, I get the call probably a few weeks before saying, hey, you know, we're looking for someone to do opening night and then we'll figure it out. And yeah, we're going through the schedule and I'm like, wow, I can actually do a lot of these games, which is great. So big credit to the folks at the PWHL and their internal consultants and production agents for thinking of me, really appreciate that opportunity for sure. I think what stood out to me was this is a net zero league, right? Like, you know, I think not to disparage these efforts in the past, but it feels as though athletes have spoken up and saying, hey, we're not getting this right, right? Like we're, I'm not sure what the problems were, right? I hadn't watched much professional hockey. I'd always supported, you know, the game women's wise, mostly at the college level had been my work, but there were a lot of complaints from the athletes that have been very well documented. Just the conditions, right? The minimum salaries, the game checks, all that stuff. It was sort of treated as you know, you have a job, you have a career, whatever. And oh, by the way, you're a professional women's hockey player on the weekends, right? And I credit the players a lot for speaking up and saying, you know, hey, we want to be treated as professional athletes, right? We want a respectable minimum salary. We want, better facilities, things like that. And the folks at the PWHL stepped up, right? You have an investor group led by Stan Kasten, who I met on opening night, the minority owner of the Dodgers, that basically opened his checkbook and said, here you go. What do we have to do to get this work, right? And Billie Jean King, who's been an incredible ambassador for women's hockey. So, it's been really special to see the progress this year. We keep seeing sellouts at major hockey arenas and across North America, right? You see it in Toronto, you see it in Minnesota. Long-term, I hope they play a game at the Garden that would be very special. And I think they would draw a lot of fans, right? I had the pleasure of working the Women's Beanpot this year at TD Garden as well. And to see them do almost 11,000 for a women's hockey game, that's the biggest women's hockey attendance, I believe in Massachusetts. I think it's top 10 of all time at the college level, right? So the bottom line here is we see this game growing. We see the effect of them getting it right at the pros and what that's doing for, it's having residual effects on women's hockey elsewhere. So I'm super pumped to be a very small part of this and just talk about, just voice it over basically. I'm stoked for what the PWHL has in the future.
Yeah, I think it's really cool for people too, because people are genuinely excited. It's a new thing and people are excited to follow these players and excited to watch them play. And I think for Boston in particular, because Boston is such a big sports city and people are very passionate about the teams in Boston and, for the players, they're in a great position to be very well supported by a lot of people in this community, because when Boston fans get hooked on their teams, it's game over because this city is so passionate about just being Boston sports fans, and they will support these teams until the day they die. And I think adding them into that mix of having another team for people to root for is very exciting from a fan perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I'm super impressed with the folks that have made their way up to Lowell this year. The jerseys, the standing up and chanting, I mean, that place got deafening. And the Saugus Center is not nearly what the size of TD Garden is. You know, it's, I think, 6,000 capacity. You know, credit to the folks at the PWHL Boston group that, you know, have done a great job evangelizing throughout Lowell. They put like probably 4,000 people at most weekend games anyway in the stands. And that place is crowded. You know, it's not like a random college hockey game where you have a bunch of seats open. I mean, that it's tough to find a last minute ticket there that you have a good seat for, right? So that's ultimately the mark of, you know, this place is getting rowdy. They're super engaged. They are an up and coming fan base. And what I think, you know, having worked with the PLL as well and seeing this sort of in an adjacent trajectory, is you're getting the youth involved really quickly. There's a lot of young girls there that, you know, have the signs and say, you know, hey, I want to be a PWHL player one day, right? Now they have something to aspire to, and now they're hooked, right? You get this generation involved in this league, and that's only good things for them for the rest of the for their existence, right? It's, you know, you get them hooked very young, and you get them involved in the game, and that's how you build this fan base, and I think they're doing a great job.
Yeah, no, I agree with that too, because now it's like these younger girls will have role models of like, oh, this is my favorite player, you know, in the league right now, and this is who I want to be. And I feel like that's how it starts for a lot of young athletes in general, is you see athletes on TV that you enjoy watching, and you're like, I want to be that person one day. And for kids now that are playing the game to have those role models who are also women and saying like, wow, she's so good at what she does, like, I want to do that one day, it's just opening up so much more interest in, you know, a variety of different age groups. And I think it's good that so many people are invested in getting involved. And the players too, I know, have spoken up a lot about just how like they feel honored to be involved and that this really came to fruition how it did. Because the players were so heavily involved with making this happen. And even on All-Star Weekend, NHL All-Star Weekend, and a bunch of the players in the league were there, and they were just talking about just like how cool it is to actually see this happen. And they're going up against other teams who also have a group of women who helped make this possible. So that's just got to be cool, because it feels like it already has this like community feel of, yes, we are on opposite teams, but we all worked together for this one like common goal to even make this game happen. And that I think is super cool.
For sure. And I look at Megan Keller as a great ambassador for the game right now, right? I see, I remember one of the very early games, someone had, a younger girl came to the game. She was, I sit at ice level at the Saugus Center in Lowell. And, you know, for warmup, she had a sign, she came right down, put the sign up, and it said, you know, it was a picture of her, Megan Keller. It said, Megan Keller taught me how to skate. And now I want to be her when I grow up. Right. And for me, I was like, okay, you know, I get this now. Right. I had sort of understood like, you know, how important this was, but I don't really think I got it until then, because now you have an example of someone that looks up to one of the PWHL players and says, hey, I want to be with you when I grow up. And that's the feelings that I had about Derek Jeter as a kid. It's the feelings that I had about, you know, like Tom Brady, things like that. And now, you know, they, you know, girls have an opportunity to see a woman that's playing professional hockey and say, hey, I can do that. You know, I think that's when I first started to understand, you know, how serious this was.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's important because those kids are the future, you know, if they want to keep the game going, you need those kids to be hooked on it and be able to look up to some of these players. And it's super cool to see how much this has really grown, and just seeing the whole process from start to finish and hear people talking about, you know, how this all came about, and now they're here and they're doing it. And, you know, so what is this like, what does the rest of the season look like for them in terms of a timeline and, you know, where the Boston team is relative to everybody else?
Yeah, well, let's pull up the standings. I haven't looked in a couple of weeks because they've been off. So let's go look. I know, so there's six teams for those that don't know, right? The top four get in. Right now, it's a tight battle for that fourth seed. So Ottawa is in fourth place with 27. Boston's got 22, and New York's got 20. So there's still quite a few regular season games left. And for those that are in the Boston area, there's two home games left in the regular season. It's April 18th and May 4th. Come on out to the Saugus Center. Yeah, I mean, Boston, it's not impossible just yet. It's going to be a tight battle down the stretch. And, this is a team that has a lot of star power, right? They've got Jamie Lee Rattray and Hillary Naidoo, who was, with the U.S. Olympic team at one point. Erin Frankel, who I remember broadcasting games as, a 22-year-old at Northeastern, when they played Providence, where I was freelancing for a while. She's been lights out in goal. This is a team that's they've got some work to do. They've got to get some major wins here, but this is going to be a real tough playoff battle down the stretch.
Yeah, and that's what makes it so fun too, is now people can really get hooked on like, okay, monitoring those standings and saying, okay, like, are they going to get in or are they not? And it's always so fun when it's that tight of a race and people are like, oh yeah, like they need to win these games down the stretch. And I think the more support that they have in those games and the more people that are filling those seats to root for them, the better it is going to be for their chances of getting in. And that's something else I love about being kind of like in the Boston sports realm and the Boston sports fan base is people show up for games and people will be there for these teams. And I think that's another big thing too is, this team's on the cusp of getting in. So they need that support from the crowd, which in this fan base is something that will happen.
It's palpable, right? Like all the Boston teams show up. There's a this weird dissatisfaction with the Red Sox right now, which I understand. I get it, but even still, they sold out opening day, right? They had 39,000 people in the crowd. I think it's this fan base. What I'm learning very quickly is it doesn't matter where they are, they show up.
Oh yeah, exactly. And people were talking about how, oh, I can't wait till there's nobody at Fenway Park this year. And I was like, I
It's
feel
not
like
gonna
that's
happen.
so unrealistic. Like that's not gonna happen. Like those Fenway seats are still gonna be filled. And people will talk on social media about boycotting games and all that. But like at the end of the day, people still love these teams and they're still gonna go, even if the Red Sox are, having a really bad season this year. Like it's still a great environment to go to Fenway and be at games during the spring and the summer when the weather is nice. Like people want to sit outside and watch a baseball game. So it doesn't really matter. Like
Right.
people aren't like, oh, I'm not going to go because the Red Sox are bad. It's just like a great environment to watch sporting events, in general, but especially in a place like Boston, because it's just so, the crowds are so electric there.
Yeah, for sure. No, I won't fight you on that one. That's I fully agree.
Well, it's just such an exciting time right now. Like we have so much going on with sports, the Bruins, getting ready for the playoffs, PWHL, they're fighting for spots now too. So definitely a great time to be a hockey fan for sure. And Jake, I definitely appreciate you coming on here with me and chatting about a lot of different things today. I definitely wanted to end with asking you what you love the most about this job.
Oh wow, that's man. It's impossible to say everything. I mean, I sort of, when I took this role, you get desensitized to it all a little bit, right? Like for me, I sort of have to approach this as coming to work, right? As sort of, doing my job, taking my fraction of what, the countless hours and weeks of preparation that the Bruins have put into, their game presentation. And that goes all the way up to the top, right? This is a huge year for them. They had the centennial celebration. This is their 100th season, obviously. So this is painstaking preparation across the board. I think for me, being appreciative of the opportunity is so huge, right? But also understanding, you're a professional, you're there for a reason, right? There's a lot of people that I know would be out the door for a job like mine. So you just sort of have to be appreciative of being there and understanding that moment for what it is. And that's not all lost on me. Another thing that's not lost on me is is the folks who have done this before me at TD Garden, right? Steve Forney was there for 4 years and stepped away. But Jim Martin, the voice of the Bruins for 26 years, was a huge help for me in getting acclimated to the NHL. I'd only done, you know, two or three NHL games before I was permanently there. So for a guy like Jim to have sort of given me advice and to have counseled me through this process, I don't know where I would have been without him, right? A guy that's done countless Stanley Cup games and has been has witnessed, you know, the greatest moments in Bruins history, I think is huge. I think I say that because, you know, your question is, what do you love most about this job? And I think it's just the many moments that happened within the season, right? Like I point back to opening night of this year where they have the centennial celebration, the Raptors reunion, and where they introduce all the players and stuff. And I look back, you know, at the ceremony on YouTube every now and then and say, like, wow, this is something that you sort of don't realize how important that is in hockey lore until it's over, right? You do the ceremony. You're not thinking like, oh my God, it's Bobby Orr in the building. It's Phil Esposito. It's whoever else. But it's something you appreciate more once you're done with it. Right. And, you know, for me, I take that as an opportunity to show my kids that in years, right. To show grandkids that in the next 50. Right. And that's sort of what I love the most about this. It's having those moments, you know, and artifacts. I'm looking at my Bergeron signed puck from last year, right? Where yeah, my parents cool. came to Bergeron's 1,000-point ceremony. They buy the memorial puck as, you know, sort of a gift for me. And then the staff at the Bruins was kind enough to have Patrice sign it for me, right? So that's like that's one cool. of those things that I'm going to look back at and say, wow, I got to be a part of this in some way, shape, or form. That's by far what I love most about this gig.
Yeah, it's definitely something that you can't take for granted. And like you said, there are so many people who would dream to have a job like that. And I feel like if you love sports, finding a way to talk about sports and making that, you know, a job, it's not going to feel like a job. It's just going to feel like this is something I love doing and I'm just like a part of it all. And that's probably such like a rewarding thing for you.
Yeah, literally. This is something that I am. It's a hobby that I and something that I've enjoyed that I just happen to make a livelihood off of, right? And I think it's so important. Like, you know, I've got a full-time job outside of this, right? Like you know, that's not my only gig, right? And it's important to have something in your life in general to that keeps you fulfilled, right? And I don't know where I'd be without some sort of sports in my life, right? This is, yes, you know, it's a career for me. It's somewhere that, you know, I have aspirations and broader goals, but it's also something that, you know, I show up and, I'm sort of treating this as an honor to my goals and my dreams when I was a kid, right? Of like how grateful I would have been to have a gig like this. That's sort of what's getting me through this, right? Like, think about, I saw a quote on Twitter or Instagram or whatever it is. It's every time, you know, you think about slowing down or maybe, you know, you seem ungrateful for something and you just say, oh man, like I've got to go to a Bruins game or whatever. I've got to work it. Like, think about your 5-year-old self or your 10-year-old self that would have killed to see you in that role. And they would have been like, what the hell? Why are you complaining about this? Right. So that's what keeps me going, yeah. Right. Like, you know, if there's some days that are a drag, right. You know, there's yeah. life goes on outside this, right. Maybe a scenario pisses you off, right. Maybe you've got stuff going on family wise, work is killing you. Right. And then the last thing you want to do is go put on a suit and go speak into a microphone and have pounding music in your head. You know, I give a second to honor those thoughts of like, yeah, you know, this is a real feeling I have, but also I owe this to myself, right? Like I've worked hard for this opportunity. I've made this my goal. So don't be ungrateful, right? That's how I'm approaching this every day, right? There are those moments that, you know, you struggle to sort of get on your feet and go, but I think that's a broader lesson for life, right? There's stuff that, you know, you just owe to yourself. And I think that's for me, you know, what gets me out and what gets me out of bed and ready to go.
Yeah, that's so much fun. And just being a part of it all must be so cool. And just seeing so many passionate people that love doing, you know, what you're doing and just love being a part of it. And just when you're with a group of people who just genuinely are so passionate about it, that's what makes it so special too. And if you're doing something involving sports, like, people are doing it, chances are, because they love sports, at least I would hope. And so it's cool because it's something that, you know, all these people are saying, like, I grew up loving sports and like, I this is what I want to be doing. And so it's cool if you're surrounded by other people who share that same passion as you.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I sit next to the Bruins beat writers up on the ninth floor. So I sit right near Jim McBride of the Boston Globe, who's been, you know, covering the Patriots for many years and was reassigned to the Bruins beat this year. I sit next to Kevin Paul DuPont, who is, you know, a legend in Boston journalism, right? Ty Anderson at 98.5, Connor Ryan, the list goes on down that road. I'll save KP the disparagement that he spilled coffee on my script before game 7 last year. And I told him that was a bad omen. So sorry, KP, but I'll never forgive him for that. I give him crap all the time, but, you know, quite literally, to your point, it's surrounded by people who this has been their life, right? Like, Jim McBride is going on the road to most games this year. And, you know, this is life, right? KP has made his shtick off of being the Bruins writer. He gives unpopular opinions sometimes, but they're fair, right? So these are people that, you know, to be even loosely associated with these people, it's a true honor.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's great that you're able to be a part of it and able to, you know, share that passion. And I really appreciate you coming on here and sharing that passion with the listeners too. And hopefully it, you know, gives them motivation to find something in life that makes them feel happy, even if they don't have that right now, because it just is what makes the world go round. And we all definitely need to have that thing, like our niche that we do. And even if, you know, people don't love their full-time job, like if they have something else that they do that keeps them going and keeps them happy in life, like that's really what it's all about, you know?
Yeah, and you kind of have to have that, right? Like I have this conversation with my colleagues at my full-time job all the time, right? It could be, you just have to have something, right, that keeps you sort of fulfilled and going. It could be through children, it could be through, you know, having a family, or it could be through a creative outlet, right? It could be a podcast, it could be, you know, staying physically fit, right? Whatever that is. But I feel like, you know, everybody's got to have at least one thing outside, you know, sort of their things they have to do to keep them really fulfilled. So I'm really happy that it's a profession for me and that, you know, I have some sort of fulfillment outside of you know, the button clicks that I have to do during the day. But yeah, that's the biggest piece. If I can impart any wisdom on somebody, it's that, right? It's like, you know, keep something that keeps you fulfilled.
Yeah, no, that definitely is great advice. And thank you so much again for taking the time to come on here. I really, really appreciate the time. And I'll have to definitely let you know the next Bruins game that I go to.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Don't tell me where you're sitting unless you want the camera on you. So that's a rule. Okay. I tell everybody all the time, like, you can tell me where you're sitting, but that means the camera is going to come over there. So.
Okay. Yeah, that's definitely a good tip. Yeah, I'll be like, no, you won't know that information, but yeah,
maybe we're feeling generous and you get picked for an off ice contest or whatever. I don't know. I don't have that much pull around here, but
like accidentally,
it's a fun time.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, no, it's so fun going to the games and just being part of that atmosphere. But I really appreciate you coming on here, and everybody, as always, thank you so much for tuning into the show, and I will catch you next time. Go Bruins.